Welcome to this episode of the podcast. Today we had on Brooke Hill. So Brooke is a copywriter. She's an author, children's author. She's done heaps of cool things and I had a really good time talking to her today. She went through brand positioning, talking about names for your business, blockers that you might have in your creativity. She talked about introverts in terms of telling stories. Heaps of cool stuff. I really enjoyed the episode and I hope you do too. Hi Brooke, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
That's okay. So we're just chatting beforehand and I paused you because I thought it would just be a good idea to kick off with it. Your background and what do you see yourself as?
Sure. So it is a hard thing when you kind of think about how do I describe myself. I think a lot of people struggle with it because we have so many different, different things making up our background and different skills that we can do. But I guess I would say first and foremost I'm a writer professionally and personally. So I run a copywriting business called The Contented Copywriter, which is a team of awesome copywriters who help craft brand stories and all sorts of copywriting for all sorts of different businesses. And I also write personally. So I've written a children's picture book. And my background is in writing, but also in brand strategy and communication. So I've got quite a varied background, I guess. Did you want to go into the kind of more detail of
so where do you spend most of your time at the moment? Is it divvied up between all those things, or do you have
So essentially, so as part of the business, I write a lot of the content myself, and I also manage an awesome team. So, there's a lot of running of the business, and then there's also a lot of writing and a lot of editing as well. And then in my off hours, I also write. So as I mentioned, I've written a children's picture book. I've got a young adult fiction book underway, and I have a number of short stories that are sort of half written that I can, get to whenever I get a spare moment. And I've got a couple of kids too, so they keep me pretty busy.
That's awesome. So tell me about the children's picture book.
Yeah, so I essentially came up with the idea in the wee hours of the morning when I was probably feeding my little bub. So I've got a four-year-old and an almost four-year-old and an eight-month-old. I've always been big on reading and stories, but and in particular bedtime stories, and also reading the same story every night. It's like a signal for their brains to kind of know that it's sleep time. And it's also just they know what to expect and you get a lot of enjoyment out of. And I couldn't find the book that I had in my mind. So there was a specific book that I wanted to read to them about the adventures of two siblings. Because when you have second child, I think you imagine how you want their relationship to be. Now, it's not always going to be like that. We all know that, there's going to be bumps along the way. But I think you kind of start out hoping that way. And a lot of the bedtime stories that I was reading were just about one kid or they were kind of more broader stories. So yeah, it just kind of came to me in the wee hours of the morning, and I sort of got my phone out and
What's the story about?
It's about those two siblings, and yep. It could be broader. It's about two kids essentially and the different adventures they have. So starting from being very little, and those it's sort of like a journey of their little lives together. So those tender moments from first learning to clap and through to splashing in puddles and then climbing trees and getting stuck. And it's just got a beautiful kind of rhythmic bedtime. It's kind of like almost like a lullaby. So it's very lyrical the idea is hopefully it will lull them both off to sleep.
That's awesome.
And sort of, almost like a manifestation of, okay, this is the happy little relationship that you'll have together.
So from the time that you started taking notes in your phone that night to the time that you made it? Was it a hard process to get it to publish?
The process of writing of it was a really interesting one because, I just sort of did the brain dump. So I had sort of words that were pairing up and they were kind of in my mind. I got all of those out and then pretty quickly I shared it with a couple of trusted friends, you know, my husband, what do you think? And they came back and, you know, gave a great response. And then I sort of went back to them and I'm like, okay, so tell me really specifically, what are the bits that work for you, what don't? So then I edited it. And then I actually sent it off to a couple of editors who they used to work with some of the big publishing companies, but since set up their own and booksellers, and they since set up their own consulting agency. So I sent it off to them, and I was planning on self-publishing because I have a big personal drive to do things myself. Yep. And I think the creative process of doing that will be really interesting and something to learn from. But they were like, do you know what? Go for it. Try to get it published. Like, you know, they gave awesome specific feedback, which I addressed. And then I took it up to, there was a children's CYA conference up in Brisbane. Literally booked it, got on the plane with my 4-month-old and, you know, I wasn't sleeping and it was crazy. But got up there, had a friend walk him around the block while I went, and you literally have like a 10-minute, you book 10-minute time slots with the editors, and it's like the only, of all the major children's book publishers in Australia, it's the only time you can ever get in front of them, because when you send a manuscript off, the blanket response is most publishers won't actually accept a manuscript. The ones that do will have a form that you fill out online, and they will say, we will get back to you if we're interested within 3 months, and if we're not interested, you'll never hear from us again. So to get through those gatekeepers is like so tough. So this conference, it happens once a year, and it's the only time you can sit in front of them. So I sat down and I pitched it to a few publishers, and they were really encouraging. They were really interested, and so I had to go away, do further edits. Again, that process was really interesting. They basically gave me advice to like get it read out by 10 different people, and then listen to it over and over and over and over and over again until. Because you will get bored of it, because that's what parents do. They read the same story over and over and over again. So keep refining it until you don't get bored of hearing the same thing over and over again.
So they're thinking of it as the parents who want to keep reading the book as opposed to the children who want the book?
Exactly. So you're writing for two audiences. So yep. You're writing for, and in particular with my book. So my book is very much targeted to parents because it's the book that you would give other parents when they are about to have their second child.
Yep.
And you would say, read this, you'll love it, and they'll read it and they'll get that, like that juicy feeling of, you know, of warmth thinking about their two little kids because they're, you know, in hormonal heaven before the reality of actually having two children kicks in. But, you know, so it'll be that really, it's a gift-giving book, I guess. So it's aimed at parents.
Yep.
But the children have to sit there and they have to enjoy it too.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. You
have to get those two different audiences reading it and reading it over and over and over.
It's the same premise for like Pixar movies and they're targeting the parents.
Totally, because they're the ones that have to sit there. And, you know, like I am such a – I love, you know, Pixar and Disney movies. Like I'm, you know – I absolutely love to watch them, but for that, you know, for that reason, they make them for you. There's as much for the adults as there is for the kids. So,
what's your favourite?
Favourite Disney movie is probably Beauty and the Beast.
You're right.
Like going back, and I can still sing it from start to finish. But I do love Frozen. My daughter's big into Frozen. And I'm very happy to sit down any time and watch it.
Yeah, I took my son to Frozen. I think there was just that slight bit of too much singing.
Yes.
But good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Just that slight bit of love. Just definitely interested in what you said about, one, getting other people to read it, but not through the editors, but when you originally put it out to your friends and network.
Yeah.
Because I think about this a lot in terms of creating, in terms of building, at what point to do that.
Yes.
Because ultimately you're just throwing it at a very small sample of people who are all running through their own belief systems.
Correct.
And you don't want that to stall the process in any way.
Correct.
So have you already pretty much decided what you want before you bounce the feedback, or do you bounce ideas early? Where do you go with that?
So I was listening to some really good advice actually by other writers on this, because I really wanted to be sure about that, because asking for feedback can be a can of worms, and it can squash ideas, and it can also transform ideas into something that they possibly shouldn't be. So the key thing is, I believe, to ask few people and ask them specifically what you want feedback on. So I didn't just send it to them. Well, there were a couple of girlfriends that I sent to them and I said, let me know what you think. But I was very clear that I only want their praise. Like, because it was so early, I just wanted encouragement. I just wanted enthusiasm. I just wanted them to say, oh, you know, this is wonderful. And I knew they would, and that's why I sent it to them.
Yeah.
Then when I went back the next time, I said, Can you read this aloud? So I gave them a specific task to read it, to record it on their phone and send it back.
Yep.
And can you tell me which bits glitch for you, or which bits are difficult to say?
Yep. So you've given them specific outcomes rather than thinking about or asking or getting them to just move to what their overall opinion is.
Correct. Yep. Correct. Because I've decided I have belief in what I'm doing.
Yep.
I got that early encouragement, which I needed as a booster. But by the time I've asked them for specific feedback, I'm confident in what I'm doing, but I know I'm very conscious that it's still the craft of it still needs work. So I ask for specific feedback. And I think that's really important, linking it back to a business sense, particularly when you're running a small business. Even, you know, deciding on your business name, or, you know, if you've written a blog and you're not quite sure, it can be tempting to get a lot of people to read it. And there's a lot of people that probably don't have the experience or the or the diplomacy to give you feedback in the way that you actually need it.
Yep.
So that's what I would always recommend, is ask, you know, a few people and be very specific about what you want feedback on, and ask and tell them that. Say, I don't want feedback on anything else. I just want you to comment on these things.
And for those business owners, and we work with startups here, and I've done a few things myself, that early naming phase seems to be a big blocker for people, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I tend to tell people that it doesn't matter as much as they think.
Yeah.
But you definitely go against me here. And then I always just give the name, like the example of McDonald's.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about the name.
Yes.
And I feel exactly what you said. People, that's a really big blocker. So for you, how much effort, time in terms of the business setup, should they be spending on the name to create that brand, to be that first step of that brand?
Yeah. Look, I 100% agree with you that it doesn't matter as much as you think it matters. I went through a similar process with my business. I named it very quickly, again, probably in the middle of the night. I tend to launch a lot of things when I have very young children and I'm running on adrenaline. But I came up with a name, and then over time, I've found that it's not, like, I've questioned it, right? And so I've started to ask, you know, what should I do? Blah, blah, blah. I keep coming back to, it's not as important as we think it is. And some people like like the name, and some people don't. And there's benefits to names, and there's drawbacks to others. And you may never arrive at the perfect name. I think sometimes going through the process of thinking about it is really important, because you kind of start to have those important conversations in your head, which is crucial for developing a business, about what what you want the business to be, what you want it to stand for. Like, those are important questions that you need to resolve. And sometimes thinking about the name helps you come up, helps you answer those questions. And I think that early thinking is important. But, you know, when you're starting to get up in the middle of the night and, you know, and worry about it or, you know, change your mind or what have you, just put the stop on it. There's more productive ways to be spending your time.
And do you believe in that creation? I'm picturing two types of people, like someone like yourself who is thinking about the name, how it feels, the experience of it, also how it links into what you're about. And then you might have another person who is just, say, running a business, they're a master at their service, but ultimately, and you may say that there's either creative and non-creative, or everyone should be creative, but just say for someone who sees themselves as non-creative, should they just move past it? Should they outsource some help? Should they just not worry and just focus on what they're doing?
I think in that super early stage, they should just I don't think it's I think naming a business doesn't have to be a creative process. Mm. You can name the business your own surname.
Yeah. What's your feeling on that, people who name things after themselves?
I have absolutely no issue with it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Some of the biggest businesses that are around today are based on a person's surname. And do you know what? Once you've made that decision, you never have to unthink it.
Yep.
You know, look, and sometimes you can feel like it can be limiting in the sense that, so say, for example, if you're a business coach or something like that and your ultimate end game is that you're not a singular, you want to be have a full team. But, you know, there's if you think about, you know, some of the greatest coaches and consultants that are out there, they all trade off their name.
Yep.
You know, and everybody knows that they have an enormous team behind them.
Yeah.
That they're not personally doing every single component of their business. So that's okay.
Yeah, cool.
I have no issue with it. If it'll help you get to the outcome, you know, sooner, then, you know, then that's fine.
My thought always goes to the selling of the business.
Yeah.
Like, so it's, all right, you have your consulting company.
Yeah.
And then suddenly in 5 years' time, you build up with extra writers, you have other sources of consulting in that business.
Yes.
People are, even though they're dealing with people who work for you, they know that you're steering the ship.
Yeah.
And then when you don't have it and a new CEO moves up potentially.
Yeah.
I feel like, from my point of view anyway, that it just seems like it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So it's like, who would you find to buy it who wants that brand and those consults, and then future clients coming into the process and you're not involved anymore?
Yes. I think it's not ideal, but it can be managed.
Yeah.
Right? So if you think about, you know, M&C Saatchi comes to mind because I used to work for them. But, you know, that's a business that is so big and so global that it doesn't matter whether Maurice Saatchi is still there or not.
Yep.
His principles are ingrained. They still have this brutal simplicity that, you know, that runs, that it's so ingrained throughout the business that that's what they stand for, that the fact that he's not there, you know, that can be managed.
Yeah.
So I think it's the power of how you set up the values and belief systems that processes and principles that extend beyond yourself. So to that point, it's not ideal.
Yeah.
It probably creates extra headache and a bit an extra risk at the end, but it can be worked around.
And you would have to be pretty impressive to be the type of person that can ingrain every single person within your company with these beliefs, these habits, these ways of doing service that, I guess, create a wave about what you're about, what the business is about.
Yeah.
Whereas I think in a lot of business, even though they would like to do that, they don't create that.
Yeah.
They do a moderately good job, or they do the service well, but there's no echoes, if you like, of what they're about as a way of being.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for yourself at the moment, we'll just having a chat around before the podcast around creative process.
Yep.
So for those people who are blocking on names, who are looking to create ideas, who are looking to write their business, do you give recommendations to your clients on a creative process, how to get themselves into that state, and also what is your creative process?
Yeah, sure. So, so there's probably two things in terms of the immediate, I guess, breaking through when you have to, come up with a name or write a piece of work or what have you. So there's probably the immediate thing. And then there's also some work that I'm doing around exploring how we can tap into the imagination, I guess, on that more broader level. But so to the first one, thinking about, okay, so you're sitting down and you have to come up with that name, or you have to write, a blog or something like
that. Let's say a business is sitting down.
Yeah.
They've named the business after themselves.
Yeah.
They've bypassed that.
Yeah.
And they're writing the content for their website.
Yeah.
And they've created a services page.
Yeah.
So they've spoken about the three or four different services that they offer. Now they're up to the about page.
Mm-hmm.
Where they actually try to have to speak to their potential customer on what separates them away from the competition.
Yes.
How would you help or give advice to that person creatively in terms of getting themselves in the right state to do that, and then also ideas around that?
Yeah, sure. So, and look, it's a really good one, because writing an About Us page is the thing that businesses struggle with the most, hands down. And even as a writer, you can't imagine the pressure that you're under to have an awesome About Us page when that's what you do, is you write About Us pages for other businesses, you know. So it is one of the most challenging things that that you can write. Because it's everything. It's who you are as a business. It's what you stand for. It's why people should work with you. Should either, if they're service based, work with you, or why they should buy from you. It's why you're better than the rest. Like, it's the whole elevator pitch, and it's also the second most clicked on page usually in somebody's website. They look at the homepage, and then they look at the about, and they look at the products, you know. But and some people take a different journey, but often it's the second page that people click. So so in terms of writing it, the first thing, and the same principles apply to any piece of written work. The first thing that you do is you just sit down and you just write. You set a timer for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and you just let it all pour out, and you don't stop. And even if there's something where you go, oh, I need to check that statistic, or, oh, I'm not sure about that, it doesn't matter. You just write it, and you just write XXX, whatever, where that spot was that you know that you need to come back to. You just write, and get it all out. And that's really important, to have that unfiltered, unedited, raw content. Now, it's highly likely that that will be absolute rubbish, and that's okay, and you need to get past that, because I think a lot of people sit down and they'll type something and then they'll delete it. No, it's not right, and they keep, back and forth. You just need to get it all out. And then what you need to do is to circle back to structure. So when it comes to writing an About Us page, you need to be really clear on on those things that I mentioned. You need to be really clear on what you offer as a business, like what actually are you doing. It sounds crazy, but there's a lot of it's a lot of the time people don't even say what it is that they're selling.
Yep.
So you need to be clear on what you're selling. You need to be clear on why you're selling it. So what's the purpose behind it? What are you trying to, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to change for people? What are you trying to help them with?
Yeah.
You need to be really clear on what you stand for. So what are the values that you have as a business? You know, is it really important to you that you work with integrity? Is it really important to you that, that you are really trusted? There's lots of things that on that really kind of core level that are really important to you, that you need to be able to communicate. And you also need to be clear about what you want them to do as well.
Yep.
So, do you want them to have a phone conversation with you? Do you want them to, have a look around your website and buy something?
Yeah.
So you need to do that work, and that's where, brand strategy and things like brand positioning help. But even if you don't have all that, and even if, you know, you don't have a writer or a strategist that can help you with all of that, you can just write them down.
Yep.
And just be clear on it.
Yeah. So just for people listening, because it can be very ambiguous in terms of what it actually means. Let's just go down brand.
Yep.
What do you think brand is?
Yeah.
And then also, what's brand positioning?
Okay.
Because people hear it a lot of the time. They're like, brand, and they're like, oh, it's the colours of our business.
Yes.
It's a little bit about what we're trying to do, but they keep moving back in to end up talking about what they do, not why they do it.
Yes.
So, yeah, for brand, what would you say your definition of brand is?
That's a very good question, and I probably would need to look up a very clear and concise definition. But to me, it actually is inextricably linked with your business itself, and it's how people perceive you from an outside perspective. So it's how so that can be how you look. So a lot of people think that brand is a logo. No, they're right. It's how you look. It's a logo. It's the colours that you use. It's also how you sound. So what are the? So it's the words that you're using. It's there's also increasingly a market for sonic strategy where you have it's how you you have tunes and the jingles. Well, I suppose everybody's been doing jingles for forever, but there's also a piece about how you sound. It's how you people and when we talk about things like values, it's how people relate to your business as well. So people connect with people, and why we talk about things like values and brand values as being so important is because people seek connection, and they won't necessarily connect with a business that wants to sell them something, but they might connect but they might just connect with people that stand for something. So it's a different. So it comes down to that outside perception. So if you think about business, it's all the things that you're doing to, to make the business run. But the brand is that external perspective. So that's why thinking about those things are really important. Now, so for your next question, it's about brand positioning.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yep.
So brand positioning is a piece of work that you do which identifies why you are different to your competitors and why somebody should buy for you. So buy from you, rather. So it's a piece of work that you would do to understand what your strengths are as a business, who your customer is, what keeps them up at night, what worries them, what motivates them, and how you can specifically help that. What your competitors are doing, so that you can understand how to be different. And the best brand positioning is kind of crystallise that down into one or two sentences, so that if somebody came up to you and said, "What do you do? What's it all about?
Yep.
Why should I buy from you?"
And is that true that you don't market what you don't do? Oh, sorry, you don't market to say your competitor is always late to appointments.
Yes.
You don't say we're never late to appointments, or we don't do contracts or something like that. Have you heard this? It's more you don't market what you don't do, you market what you do. So
you
rather
do.
Than saying we don't have lock-in contracts, like you might say we have short-term agreements.
Look, I think there's a fine line. I think people want positivity, I think, at the end of the day. So, rather than focusing on the negative and what competitors are doing, you focus on the promise of what you're going to deliver that's going to be so much better.
Mm.
I was listening to a podcast the other day on it wasn't a podcast, I was watching a video on Simon Sinek, who was talking about Simon Sinek is a strategist and consultant to businesses all over the world, and look him up if you can, because he has always just says the most mind-blowing things. But he was consulting to Microsoft, and then he had to go and consult to Apple. He had to speak at these different conferences. And Microsoft spent all their time focusing on what Apple was doing and how they could be better. And they actually had better products, whereas Apple stayed in their own lane.
Yep.
And they just focused on what problems they could solve for their customers, but how they could promise them something more. And so it's that promise that that people connect with. It's not why, you know, it's not why we're different. You know, it's not why this product is specifically better and all the ins and outs. So I think, you know, by that comparison, Microsoft, you know, potentially is talking about what they don't do and Apple's talking about what they
do. So they're not getting caught in what the competitors are doing and saying, oh, we do this, but they don't do it.
Yes.
You're just talking about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So how would, just say, client comes to you and getting you to think on the spot a little bit here. Just say they're like a bathroom renovation company.
Mm-hmm.
Similar services to everyone else around, whether some people might be doing it better, some people might be doing it worse, but that's not going to come out in your own marketing.
Yeah.
How would you get a business like that to create a brand or something that identifies them as a bigger need than a process like that? Or even like even go down the route of just say like a plumber.
Why are they different? So the first thing you do is you, I guess, start off with their customers and try and understand their customers and try and understand what their customers need. And when you ask somebody in each of the different businesses about their customers, they tend to, by starting to ask those questions and to start to dig around a little bit in that space, you can start to identify how they might be currently solving problems for their customers that potentially others aren't. So if you kind of start to look at that from that customer perspective, you can usually find, you know, it might be a lot of it comes down to nuance. Like it could be that, you know, this plumber, he's just that bit more punctual, or he might just get back to you that bit quicker. And you know, you can look through that, and then you can look at what their strengths are and what they know that they do do well. So they might not have. So the customers might have said, "Oh yeah, actually, he responded quicker than all the other plumbers." So if you're asking the customers, they probably know why they chose that person over the others, right? So they can answer that question. And then you can ask the people in the business, okay, what do we do well? And they usually have a pretty good idea about that. Sometimes it's not what the customers think they do well, and that's why you have to ask the customers, or you have to, like, dig around and kind of try and get a feel for that. And then I think what really sets people apart as well is the values that they hold. And that's why I always come back to, you know, circling back to that conversation about the About Us page and brand positioning, is you do need to go through this process of going, okay, what do I believe? What do I stand for? Because it may well be that a lot of your competitors haven't really thought about it. And if they have, they're different human beings. They probably have very different principles and ethics and values that you do. So if you can kind of start to define those, well, then if you come straight out and say it on your website, these are the things, you know, so you can say what your customers said that you do differently and better. Yep. You know what you're good at. And then you can say, actually, do you know what? This is what drives us. This is what makes us, you know, what we hold dear. By the time you add all those things up, I think you're in a pretty good place to actually stand out.
And how important nowadays, as opposed to just say 10, 15 years ago, do you think it is for business owners to not hide behind the brand of their business? Like, so if they're writing the About Us page, not necessarily just about the business, also about who they are as a person, because uniqueness is a big thing, being vulnerable, all these things that have been elevated by social media, but now a necessity almost to build trust.
Yes.
Because you can't just build trust by just that consistency in brand, or you can't build trust anymore from just looking professional.
Yes.
Do you suggest to people that they need to get out of their shell? Do they need to tell stories about themselves?
Yeah.
How?
Absolutely. So you know, it is going on an interesting path, because I think a lot of people, you know, particularly more introverted types, you kind of saw the wave of social media and you saw all the influencers and it, you know, coming out and taking selfies, and it feels like this very look at me culture. And I think most people that I speak to, they're like, oh, I don't want to be sound like I'm one of them. You know, that's not me. And I don't want to be perceived by other people that's how I am. You know, I don't want to share too much. And it's something that I've struggled with myself, because I'm quite a private person. So it is hard to, you know, to kind of get over that and put yourself out there. But we are in a world where we are so bombarded by so many messages. So I was reading a statistic the other day that we are exposed to something like 34 gigabytes of information in a day, right? And we have 100, and we're exposed to, we don't read this many, but we're exposed to 100,000 words a day. Like, that's a lot. So think about yourself, and you're sitting down, you know, for a couple, say you're going to a dinner party and you're meeting somebody and all they talk about is what they do as a business. Are you going to listen to them, or are you going to listen to the person next to them who's telling a story about what he did, you know, what he did with his day, and maybe what he did with his kids, or the holiday that he went on, or, you know, or what was important to him, and, you know, what, yeah. So you think about who you'd want to have a conversation with, what words you'd want to listen to, and I guarantee you it's the more personal ones that you're going to start to tune into. So you need to find ways, I guess, to get over that, and to find ways in revealing more of yourself that you're comfortable with. That doesn't mean you have to, you know, put the whole kit and caboodle out there. You know, you can still leave parts of yourself for private, and that's really important too. But you can, you know, choose the things that you're comfortable talking about.
Yep.
It might be that, you know, you're on a personal level, you're quite into fitness, so you're happy to chat about that. And, yep, you know, the challenges that you faced or what have you, and how that relates to what you're struggling with professionally.
Yep.
That's more personal. But you're not necessarily telling them that you're up in the middle of the night, you know, having, you know, caring for your elderly grandparents or something like that, that actually is quite personal to you and you don't feel comfortable speaking about.
So if you're giving advice to, say, we'll stay with business owners, but could it be friends, it could be even introverted people who want to connect better, who want to be able to tell better stories.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and I see this for myself, and I've spoken to friends who have different backgrounds, different circumstances, it can be hard to create, or harder, or maybe just this is lacking the imagination, to create a narrative that seems appealing to the other people if there's no dramatic downs or adversity.
Yes.
Have you explored that within yourself in terms of examining past events, trying to create those into stories, or even could you give a structure of a good story to see where people can sort of plug themselves into each element? So it's like, I'm going to a dinner with friends.
Yeah.
I have an event that occurred in the past.
Yeah.
Like, how do I create myself as a character, or how do I lead people in? Is there things like their time and like place of where it's been? How do I set that up?
Yeah. Yeah. So very good questions. And I'll start with, I guess, talking a little bit about, you asked, I guess, about things that I've experienced in the past, and then I'll kind of come back and remind me if I forget.
I asked a few questions in there.
No, that's all right. No, it's good. Really, really good questions. If I think about sharing parts of myself, I've personally always struggled about that, and I think part of that is actually down to the fact that I'm usually so focused on the next thing. I don't often think about what I've done in the past. You know, but one of the, so if I think about the career that I've had, I've been extremely fortunate. And there's so many tidbits, I guess, that I've been exposed to. So I guess if I think about, so just to provide a little bit of background, so I started while I was at uni doing internships for Harper's Bazaar magazine, and then I went and worked for the Australian Women's Weekly. And through that, I was exposed to all these amazing Australian celebrities. So I would be organising and working on shoots with people like Olivia Newton-John or Slim Dusty. Like, I remember Slim Dusty giving me, you know, his guitar, and I, you know, and strumming that and holding the pick that he, you know, that he used to use. You know, just these beautiful experiences. And, you know, and then I went to the UK and I was working with one, and I worked as part of one of the top communications agency over there. And now they were doing content before content was even called content. And they were working with influencers before influencers were influencers. You know, these were like leading minds that used to also work with some of the biggest...
What year was it?
This is in the 2000s. So I moved to the UK in 2003 and moved back about 2002 and moved back around 2008. So this is before, I guess, the whole content is king thing, you know, really happened. But they used to work and connect some of the big brands like Procter & Gamble, who, I mean, in terms of learning about customer experience, that's sort of next level what they did. They used to connect people with connect brands with influencers, so magazine editors at the time, who were the most the kind of the big influencers, to have real conversations. And, you know, I guess that's something that I don't personally, you know, talk about. So running events all over the world, rubbing shoulders with international celebrities like Leonardo DiCaprio and Bono and Andrea Bocelli and, you know, just incredible experiences. How then do you share what... how then do you share those experiences in a way that's interesting? So the first thing to do is to identify a problem. So my problem is that I've had trouble sharing this information. Then you think about the detail of that and some of the specific instances that you did, and you add colour. So if you think about what I've just told you about, I started with the problem. My problem is I'm not comfortable speaking about it. Then I added a bit of colour. I told you a little bit about Slim Dusty and strumming his guitar. And then I talked a little bit, and then I'm going to tell you what I guess I learned from it, so that somebody else can also learn from the experience. So what I learned from a lot of all of that was that I learned the power to ask, so what?
Yep.
So with a lot of businesses that I work with, people will talk about what I do and why that's so great. And all those working with those influencers, working with some of those minds behind the communication agency, they would be the first to ask, so what? Why is that interesting? And you constantly have to ask yourself, why is that interesting to somebody else? Why is that interesting? You know, why do people care? Why do people care what you do? They don't care. Tell, you know, how can you rephrase your experience in a way that actually makes them interested? And the only thing you can do to be able to do that is to ask them. Ask those people, what are you interested in?
Yep.
Start with a question. Share a problem. Tell them a story, fill it with colour and little moments, and then tell them what you learn from them, and then they can walk away and they might have learned something.
So do you think they should practice their stories?
Yeah.
Or have intent behind?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's having intent behind it. So having an intent to help, I guess. It needs to, whatever you do needs to come from a place of helping people. And I think that's the thing with businesses as well. We do think, okay, I want to sell. We all want to make money. I mean, that's the whole reason why we're in business. Otherwise, we'd be, you know, reading books on beaches all day, you know. But you have to want to help people. And I think if you come from that place of wanting to learn, wanting to help others, then you can think about your stories in a way that have intent. You can kind of connect it back.
Definitely, and I'll be interested to see if you've noticed this in your time overseas. Any time I've been overseas, I notice that a lot of other countries that you go to seem to be significantly better at telling stories about themselves than Australia.
Yes. Yeah.
Have you noticed this?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I think, you're absolutely right. But Americans are well known for being really confident communicators. And really enthusiastic communicators and sitting down and telling a story. The Irish, I mean, who doesn't want to sit down and listen to, one of my mentors is an Irish woman, and you just want to sit there and listen to her all day. It's kind of inbuilt into them in a sort of a self-deprecating way. But we, as Australians, it comes back to the whole tall poppy thing. We're scared to share, because we value things like mateship and we value things like hard work, and sharing those parts of yourself seems kind of at odds with that somehow.
What do you think people are scared of?
I think judgment.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, but you have to push past that, because at the end of the day you're worried about your mother-in-law's judgment, and you're worried about your old friend from high school's judgment, and they're not buying your service. So worry about the judgment of the people that you're selling a service or product to. And the only way that you can get over that, and if you can't get over that judgment, then you need to have more conversations with them to find out how you can better help them. And then there's no barrier, because you're talking directly to them.
Yeah, I definitely find that interesting, that fear of judgment, and I think for it to occur, there must be some evidence of it being slightly higher.
Yeah.
Totally different segue, but we'll chat in again briefly on it before, and I'd just love to hear your ideas and what you've been thinking about in terms of imagination.
Yeah.
I know that you wanted to you've been toying around with a lot more, looking to express more about it, so...
Yeah.
Is it something that people are good at, not good at? Is it something we need to focus on more as a society?
Yeah.
And could that help with fear of judgment as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So thinking about imagination, so my big concern, and I think it's a concern that we all should have, is that imaginations are under threat. So if you think about the lives that we lead, and that even those stats that I was talking to in terms of we're exposed to 100,000 words in a day. And I was thinking about this morning. So I went to the gym and I was on the elliptical, you'll tell me,
the
cross trainer. And I had two TVs in front of me with different stations on. I had headphones in my ear with a trainer's voice telling me what to do and music behind that.
Yep.
I had the screen of the elliptical, which had like a moving, horizon or whatever it was that I was running to. And then I had my phone in front of me so that because that was what the app that I was using, but people's messages were flicking up. So I haven't counted, but that's like five or six different things in the space of 20 minutes that I'm exposed to in terms of the overload of information. And I'm quite happy. I'm like, I'm learning what's on Sunrise, and I'm, finding out what's on the Today Show, and I'm getting charged, and I'm, getting my sweat on and all that sort of stuff, and that's all great. But if you think about our lives are like that pretty much all day. We're busier than we've ever been. We also live in a world where, something like 60% of our occupations, 30% of those occupations are going to be automated. So 60%, so let me describe that better. There's a McKinsey study that showed that currently right now there's 60% of occupations out there, of which 30% of the tasks can be automated.
Yep.
So that's going to significantly change the way that people's jobs operate and what their job descriptions are when things can become more automated. So what are the things that we value in business? We value things like leadership. We value things like problem solving. We value things like empathy, being able to vision, creativity. And what does imagination do? It helps all of those things. So we're kind of our brains are under threat from this constant busyness and world that we live in, but equally the very thing that we need in order to tap into. Because so what's empathy? Empathy is the ability to imagine yourself in someone else's shoes. What's what's vision? You're coming up with a business vision. It's imagining the future state. What is customer centricity? It's putting the customer first and imagining what the customer needs in order to be able to deliver it to them. So all these skills that we need to develop in order to stay competitive in our own jobs and to run better businesses, at the core of it is imagination. So if we can connect and tap into our imaginations more, the possibilities become so much greater.
Yeah. So do you put any plans in place for yourself to stop the onslaught of information to come in? I know you weren't successful this morning on the cross-trainer.
Well, after I clocked onto it. So there's different things. So like mindfulness is a big one. And mindfulness is a really important conversation that people are having at the moment, and it links into it perfectly. So because it was, I realised that I was doing it, and then I stopped. I got off the machine. I had my workout. Don't worry.
Yep.
And then I got off the machine and I went to the and when I was doing weights, I just listened to music. It's like, just doing one thing. I'm not checking my phone. And so, so it's kind of being conscious. I had to take my dog for a walk. So I didn't put a podcast on. Love listening to podcasts. Normally I'm like, how can I multitask? I just took the dog for a walk, listened to the sounds, thought about, what was around me, felt the air on my skin. So mindfulness is a big one. But we don't always have, the space and time to. So some of the other practices and the practices that we can all do are things like the yes and. So improvisation, if anyone's done – did you ever do drama?
I didn't. I missed drama at school. I think I played a little bit too much sport.
totally normal. But there's probably an equivalent. Actually, I think there's a sporting equivalent of this. But in theatre, it's an improv technique where you do yes and. And somebody will come into a room and they'll create this imaginary scenario where they're a baker and they're like, and I'm creating the best spaghetti in the world. And then the other person has to walk into the room and go, yes and. And they take it somewhere else. So they don't put a stop to the creativity. They extend on it. So this is a really important technique when you do in business and you're having brainstorming sessions or whatever. It's not no, that won't work, or have you considered this? You go yes and you build on it. Mm. So it's something that you can do in your own personal life. If you catch that you have a thread of something, if you catch yourself having a thread of a thought that feels important, just do that yes and. Go, okay, if you don't have time right now, write down that thought and come back to it. But then try to spend a bit of time going yes and, where can I take it?
Yeah, it's super common to use the word but instead of end.
Yes.
And but really pushes people into a form of rejection.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's super interesting. So with yourself as a writer now, what creative space do you use? Do you get rid of the tech for that? Do you set yourself a time limit? Do you set yourself a word limit?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where that free expelling of, free thinking.
Yeah, so you said before you set a timer.
I set a timer. Word limit feels a bit too restrictive because I guess what if you want to do more, or what if
that's true,
things aren't flowing as well. Sometimes and it's important, even when you're setting yourself into that creative zone, even if you end up typing, I can't think of anything to say. This is rubbish. Every word that comes out of my mouth is, everything that comes out onto the keyboard is rubbish, rubbish, rubbish. Even if that's all you do, you're still starting to get your brain into gear. So that's a really, really important piece.
And how important is content creation for, we'll go back to the plumber or the bathroom renovations. Let's say a blog.
Yeah.
Should they be doing it? or should, yeah. do they need to keep up with that? They're so busy with even branching slightly outside the what I said before about what they master. So just say they build bathrooms.
Yeah.
That takes up so much of their time.
Yeah.
Then the thought of running a business, they potentially are looking at like even getting a website up.
Yeah.
Then the social media is a whole other rabbit hole that a lot yes. of businesses attempt to do but don't really go deep into it.
Yeah.
As for the content for a business and a blog, should they be doing it? Is it worth it? Do you recommend it to your clients?
So the answer is yes, but I'm very pragmatic when it comes to running a business, but particularly when, you know, because we're busy, you know, you've got to focus on things that are actually genuinely going to bring in customers. And if you are having a killer, if your marketing consists of word of mouth and you are bringing in all the money that you want to make just by purely your friends and other friends recommending you, and that's really working, amazing, like, you know, that's awesome. But for most of us, we're looking for ways, how can we get more customers? Now, blogging helps, but I would say if you have all the time in the world and you want to establish yourself as a blogger or a writer, then absolutely blog away to your heart's content. But if you're a business with limited funds and limited time, then that's where blogging, but with an SEO purpose behind it, can really help. So SEO, for those who are listening who don't know what that means, SEO is what happens when you sit down in front of Google and you'll type in my tap has broken in my house. And then you might have all these plumbers that will come up, so that is called organic search. You can pay for it, and that's the results that appear at the very top of the page. But organic search is when you type it in and businesses just come up. And they do that because Google has very clever little spiders, let's call them spiders, that trawl through your website and everybody else's website, and they will serve up what they think is the most relevant content that answers the question or answers the words that people have been searching for. So if you blog, there's ways that you can improve your writing so that Google can find you more easily. It's like putting little signs up. If you've got somebody who's, lost and you want to help them, you can put little signs up in your writing to help them come and find you. So I won't get too technical about it, but basically what you can do is you can identify those words that people are sitting down and they're plugging into Google, and then you can write an article that features those words, and that will then help you be featured. You're more likely to come up on those first page of rankings when it comes to Google, and people will find you more easily.
And do you recommend, to say, for that type of business or just your general non-creative business who yeah. may be working B2B in the local market or even yeah. B2C in the local market, but they're not really known for a brand, they're not really – their social media account isn't really showcasing much.
Yeah.
Two questions in that. What do you recommend if they were to write a blog? How big should it be? And then also frequency. How often would they try to do one of these articles or blogs?
Sure. So length is different people will tell you different things. I think that your end game, even if you're writing the blog so that you can rank highly on Google, your end game is to serve your customer. So a customer is not going to want to sit down and read 1,500 words on how to fix a leaky tap. Like, they're just not. You might be interested in talking about that for 1,500 words, but nobody else is going to. So I always say the length of people that probably want to read is between, say, about 500 to 700 words. It's
yep.
just a nice amount. You can chunk up the information and people can learn something and walk away from it. And then in terms of frequency, again, people will tell you that you have to be blogging once or twice a week or even daily or what have you. It's what you can do. Like, we've got to be realistic here. You can't do it all the time. So that's why I just say that if you're going to do it, just do it well. Do it with intention. Do it to solve a customer's problem. And how do you know what their problems are? Well, that's where that keyword research for SEO can really help, because they can tell you what your customers are searching for online, so that you can go, okay, they're looking at leaky taps. I can tell them how they might be able to fix it themselves, or I can tell them what they should expect if they call a plumber out to fix that leaky tap. So you're helping them, and then you're ranking. And you're far better to do one really well then try and just pump out loads and loads and loads. But by all means, if you've got the budget,
and
pump out loads.
How much information should they give? Like, so here's some things that say you just give everything away, like even to the point where you can give them enough information to almost solve the problem themselves if they wanted to, but they'll still end up using them. Do you have a thought behind that in terms of... Do you just sort of lead, do you talk about the problem, or do you give them a little bit of help, or would you give them as much help as you could through that channel?
I think that's it. You give them as much help as you can, because, again, it's all about helping. But you've also got to realise that people take in information in short bursts. So solving a problem, they might need to read a whole book to solve that problem. So if you just go, do you know what, I'm going to write a 500-word blog post that's going to help them solve this little bit of the problem, then you're actually not giving everything away, you know.
Yep.
But you are helping them. You're helping them as much as you can in the space that, in the amount of time that you have time for and the amount of time that they can be bothered to read it.
Yep.
So, again, I think it just comes back to help them as much as you can. If you have infinite budgets, then by all means, give all your secrets away, because people are still going to come to you because they don't want to do it themselves. You know, it's like circling back to copywriting. Copywriting is a skill that anybody can learn and anybody can improve, but so is plumbing. But I do not for the life of me ever want to get under a sink and fix a leaky tap myself. I'm not interested, so I will get a plumber to do it. And I think the same thing applies with copywriting. If you want, if it's something that you're interested in and you enjoy writing, by all means, skill up, do it yourself.
Yep.
If you keep coming up about blocks and you never find the time to write the content, outsource it. Get somebody who can do it for you.
Yeah, and I think that's an important message in general, and I know I'm guilty of that as well, is that if it's not interesting to you, don't keep pushing yourself through it. There's so many ways through channels, through even getting information from people like yourself, giving information online, through hiring freelancers, through even freelancers in different countries.
Yeah.
The quality and the understanding the language barriers might make a bit of a difference, but ultimately it would probably be better than if you were to just write it yourself. Yes. Or spend weeks trying to learn structural stuff as well. So I just want to say thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
I really appreciate the conversation. So for yourself, where is your main forms of content that you put out now? What social media and what's the names of those?
So you can find me on Instagram and Facebook. Handle is @thecontentedcopywriter. Or you can check out my website at www.thecontentedcopywriter.com.au.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.